The next thing is cash on hand. And although right now you're going to say, well, cash on hand must be legitimate, it normally is. But you start to get involved in business and find out about things like kiting, which are techniques used by embezzlers and also sometimes by business owners to artificially inflate the cash. This could give you trouble in analyzing the business, but if you handle it properly when you're buying it, you end up taking over the amount of money that is really in the bank the day you take over. But there are different schemes and scams you're going to hear about, perpetrated by employees and also perpetrated by owners of businesses. And hopefully, you'll take your time and your CPA will cut off the account properly and you will not have trouble with this area, cash on hand. Let's go down to number four into this category and start talking about the inventory. Again, we said here, how about damaged stock, obsolete stock? What we keep trying to recommend is use the outside inventory companies. They're listed in the yellow pages under I. You're going to find that they're very good people. They are very professional, and they are knowledgeable in the area of the inventory you're buying or you're selling. You're also going to find the expense is not that high. They're very inexpensive. You're also going to find generally that they're bonded, which means if a mistake is made by these companies in handling the inventory or appraising the inventory or valuing the inventory during a transaction, you're going to find they're good for it. They'll make it good. Why do we try to get you to do this? We normally find that buyers and sellers end up arguing and fighting and kill the transaction if they're together any more than 40 seconds. You're also going to find the average buyer of a business is not as knowledgeable in the stock or inventory as a seller. And this then puts them on an even footing. It gives the buyer a chance in the transaction. The next thing we start to look at is a thing called prepaid expenses, and we're talking about $15,000 here. The thing you have to realize is when we're trying to buy a company, we are trying to finance as much as possible. If somebody has put up prepaid deposits or prepaid expenses that we might be able to finance, we as buyers would like to find out about it ahead of time to see if the seller will include this in the financing for 10, 15, or 20 years. Or if they won't do that, maybe we can set up a side note for 5 years and finance it. Now, for those of you listening that are representing the seller or are the sellers, what are you looking for? All cash. You want your deposits as all cash. Again, as we go through this, I'm going to be switching hats back and forth to show you there's two sides of it, maybe even three sides. But the thing to keep in mind is look for win-win situations. Keeping in mind, as I always state, that you can make more money in business honestly than you can dishonestly. So don't try to rip off the other party. It's not necessary. We also want to mention that things like change and petty cash are not available for paying bills. And also beware of marketable securities at cost. Why? They might be worth less. My gosh, could that happen? So be careful in a number of these different areas. The next category we start to get involved in, as we go down below here, are the fixed assets. And what we're saying here is the tangible physical facilities utilized by the company in performing its function. These assets usually represent a permanent investment in such items as land, buildings, which we don't have in this one, automobiles, furniture, and leasehold improvements. In this case here, it's called leasehold expenses. Now, as you start to look at this, we think about the leasehold expenses. This thing is normally called a number of things. Sometimes we see it down on the sheet as leasehold expenses. Other times you're going to see it down and it'll be described as leasehold improvements. And sometimes it'll be called fixtures. And what we basically have is we have real estate, we have land, we have a building. And then the business owner then makes additions to this. They attach the fixtures. They make improvements called leasehold improvements. Whether fixtures or leasehold improvements, what they normally means is that they are attached to the property. And once the lease is over, 5, 10, 15 years from now, the owner of the real estate gets to keep the fixtures in the other. And again, if you haven't covered the lease section, you might go back and review that because we cover that in detail in the tape that has to do with leasing. When we start to talk about the next category, the equipment value, is it the original cost, or the owner's value, or the book value, or is it the real value? What do we mean by that? Well, you're going to have to realize there's two basic categories. There's really not three or four that I run into. And what happens is I'll find an owner. The owner will say, look, I bought the equipment for $100,000 a few years ago, or maybe $200,000. I now have depreciated or used the ACRS, acres. And the equipment now, from a tax standpoint, is worth a lot less. And they have it down at the value of what they paid for it minus what they've written off. And again, that's not accurate. You're going to find, on the other hand, you're going to find a person that went down to Charlie's Junkyard about a month ago, bought the equipment for $500, and because there's always some inflation, the equipment has to be worth $30,000, $40,000 today. Neither one is accurate. And what I'd like you to do is go to the people that supply you with the equipment, and you're going to find the people that supply you the equipment are going to provide you with an appraisal on the business. They have things just like the Kelley Blue Book that they use in the auto business that lists what the different pieces of used equipment are. And you're going to find they can come back with a verbal or a written appraisal as to what the equipment's worth. And in most cases, it doesn't cost anything. My gosh, there's a free lunch. There's never a free lunch. The reason they're trying to give you this free appraisal is they want to do what in the future? They want to sell you more equipment. So find out. Why do we do this? Because recently, in the last few years, because of inflation running higher, say, than normal, we found that a lot of the equipment being purchased is actually worth as much or more than when they paid for it. And you're going to find as a buyer, you're going to pick up a lot of value in this area. You're going to find owners selling their business for $100,000. The equipment alone is worth $300,000. You're going to come back to me 50 times asking me what's wrong. In some cases, there is some fraud. But in most cases, you're going to find you just happen to get a good deal. Now, on the other hand, for those of you that are sellers or representing the sellers, I would suggest right in the beginning you go out and find out what the equipment's really worth, because the seller may end up giving away a couple hundred thousand in excess assets because he or she didn't bother going out and finding what the assets are really worth. So go out and find it. The only thing you normally have to watch out for from a buyer standpoint or somebody protecting the buyer are the sellers that don't have it down at cost, and what they do is they keep adding to the value and they have it down at what it's worth today or replacement cost. And most of these approaches, like replacement costs, end up artificially inflating the value. So it is possible that you could end up with a value on here that's a little higher. So check it out to find out how the seller arrived at it, or talk to the CPA or accountant. And beware, take your time. As we start to go to the next category, we start to talk about a thing called intangible assets. Now, these are very difficult to define because in some cases they represent definitive money value, while in others they don't have a measurable cash value. Examples are organization expense, patents, franchises, goodwill. Now, a patent and a copyright have a limited life. Again, a patent has a limited life of about 17 years. A copyright today is basically 50 years, or the life of the owner, plus 50 years. Trademark is good forever. Again, I already said here, patents are good for 17 years. Now, looking at this here, we find we have a patent value, and the patent value is $25,000. You say, hey, $25,000. Well, this example probably isn't a very good one because most of the time we find that the owners have not put on their balance sheet the value of the patent based on what they paid for it, but it's the value they, as the inventor, have attached to it. In this case here, $25,000 would not throw off the value or the purchase of the business very much. What happens if you have a business like this and the owner has a total net worth of $220,000, basic, and then on top of that there's another $4 million of patent value? You're going to find you're going to have a hard time putting that transaction together as buyer or seller. And whether the patent value happens to be $25,000 or if it happens to be $200,000 or $1 million or $2 million, what we try to do when we have a case like that as a buyer or an agent for the buyer, we try to have the seller keep the patent and the seller giving us rights under a licensing contract. And then instead of having to pay either $25,000 or $2 million for it, we pay them 0.02 cents per part produced or sold. Again, I just made up that number. What it is it ties into what you're doing. Also, if you decide not to distribute or manufacture that product later, you don't have to pay any more on that patent. It also is a win-win situation because not only does the buyer win, but the seller wins, because the average seller that has developed something or has developed a patent, a patentable item, is usually a person that is very attached to that. And this way, they keep ownership of it and they keep all the plans and blueprints. They can keep them under their bed. The next thing we're talking about here are miscellaneous assets, or on the balance sheet, we're talking about other assets. And they're identified by the process elimination. If they don't fit in other categories, place it here. Items in this category are cash surrender value of life insurance, deferred charges. And again, sometimes different categories are prepaid expenses. The prepaid expenses we have in this example happen to be things that are coming up in the next few months, so they're not long term. A prepaid asset, can you use it? Or is it worthless? Example, stationery with an old business name. And in our example here, we have prepaid paper goods of $5,000. And the thing that always fascinates me are paper goods, because I can usually walk in the back of a business and tell how many former owners we have by the number of skids with stationery and corrugated boxes. Because every time a new owner comes in and the stationery and corrugated boxes are in green, the next one's going to want yellow. The next one's going to want them purple, black, and so on. And if you go back there and find five different colors, it normally means you had five or six different owners. And what I do is I try to get rid of that. When I'm buying a company or representing somebody, I try to get the seller to buy it and keep it. Sentimental value, 10 cents on a dollar, whatever. If they don't do that, I deliver it to their garage. Why? There is not one seller, man and wife, that do not love to reminisce that they've owned that company 15, 20 years. That way, I deliver all the corrugated boxes and stationery to the garage. That way, on the weekend when the grandkids come over to visit Grandma and Grandpa, they can take them out in the garage, tell them about their past days owning the company, put together two corrugated boxes, fill it with old stationery, and send it home to their kids. Actually, the kids then, after a few weeks, don't want to send them to Grandma and Grandpa's house because of all the junk they bring back. The next thing we start to get involved in is a thing called the liabilities. And if you flip to 4.7, we're talking about current liabilities, and those are obligations which mature within 1 year from the closing date of the financial statement. It includes the demand note, which have no fixed maturity, accounts payable, notes payable, tax liabilities, accrued items. Now, the first thing we have here as we look at it is a thing called accounts payable, and it's $115,000. And what we're saying is, let's age the accounts payable. Well, what does that mean? Well, let's turn to the last page in this section, the one right after the aging of the accounts receivable, and either pull it out or just look at page 415, which is aging of accounts payable. Now what we're going to do, again, these forms are available from stationery stores in pads of, I don't know, 50 or 100. They're not very expensive. You don't have to make up your own. And what we've done here is we've given you a cross-section of the accounts payable. We haven't listed all of them because the accounts payable do amount to $115,000. We've given you five of them. We have Ace Hardware, and we owe them $4,000, and we're current. But as we get down to Bill's Deli, we find that there's $5,000 owed, and $4,000 is current, and $1,000 past due. Now you're saying, well, why do we want this? Well, one good reason. When you're buying a company, would you not like to know if they're paying your bills or not? Especially when an owner is telling you that the statement doesn't show really what they're making a lot more. You then go to the account, aging of the accounts payable, and what you find, lo and behold, they're not paying their bills either. What it usually is a reflection of, there's a problem in the business, and they're past due. And you might as well find out about it ahead of time. Now also, when you're talking about an aging and you're going in as a buyer, if an owner will not give you a list of the suppliers that they have, what we quite often do is ask them for an aging of the accounts payable. And what we end up doing is getting that. Now for those of you listening that are sellers or agent for the sellers, what I suggest you do, again, you don't have to give this information out before the offer is made and accepted. And be careful when they ask for the accounts payable. And incidentally, if you are a smart seller and you've been around a while, you do know what they're asking for. They're trying to get the information ahead of time. Now, as we start to talk about the payables, what I'd like to do is take you back to the first section again, or page 4.9, and also take you back to the section that has to do with the liabilities, which is on 4.7. So you should have 4.7 in front of you, and also 4.9. Now, we talked about the aging of the accounts payable. Also on the notes payable, wouldn't you like to make sure that the notes payable have been paid? In other words, we owe money in this company. Wouldn't you like to make sure they're paid and they're paid on time? How about taxes due? Are there past due taxes? In another section of the program, you're going to find one of the problems we have. Now, with a sole proprietorship, you're going to find in buying or selling a business, we end up without the hang-up or the problems we have on taxes. In other words, whether the taxes have been paid or not, whether there's been fraud. You're going to find out later we do have a problem. We get involved in an area called corporations. Because unless you dissolve the corporation during the escrow or closing period, you're going to find that you as the buyer end up buying the stock or maybe buying assets. But if you buy the stock and don't have the benefit of a bulk sale, which we're going to cover later, you're going to find that you end up taking over the taxes unpaid. You also end up taking over all the fraud. We'll show you later in the program how to resolve that problem and how to handle it properly. Let's continue on here. Are there mechanics liens on the property? We're going to show you how to check those later. Are the notes past due? We've already talked about that. And again, in the area of the liabilities, check these very carefully and also go through the different protection devices that we show you later. I don't care what state you work in. Do not let anybody talk you into waiving your rights under the law, because what happens is many of you as buyers end up speeding along in order to speed it up by 5 days or 10 days or 3 weeks, and you end up getting ripped off in the transaction. So later, as we show you the protection that we have built in the program for buyers and sellers, why not follow them? Take your time and go through the various steps.